I will be the presiding judge for these arguments in Division 7. To my right is the Honorable Nancy Lichtenstein, and to my left is the Honorable Sean Conley. We constitute your panel. Before we get going, I want to make sure that we have counsel for the arguments on our docket today. The first is Areola versus Super Auto. I see counselor at council table. And have counsel for Grand Valley versus Colorado Oil and Gas checked in. All right. Folks, I address these comments to everyone in the courtroom. Have counsel on all cases had an opportunity to review this court's one-page written summary of the procedures here? Anybody have any questions about those procedures? Before we get started, I would like to ask anyone who has an electronic device such as a pager or a telephone that may go off and make noise and interrupt counsel, if you would please be so kind as to either turn that off or put it on silent alarm, I would appreciate that. With that being said, we are ready to proceed in Areola versus Super Auto. And by the way, I hope I am pronouncing Ms. Areola's name correctly. If I'm not, I'm sure I will be corrected. Please proceed.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, counsel. This case is really here as a continuation of a case that started in 2007 before this court, 2007 CA 1606, and involved the same parties. In that case, the trial court found that a case brought by Lydia Areola was frivolous and groundless and had awarded Super Auto 100% of the fees incurred in the defense. The district court, however, allocated none of those fees against counsel. Super Auto first appealed to this court the failure to allocate any of the fees against counsel. On appeal, this court in that case stated, quote, the findings would also have been sufficient to support an award of fees against Montoya, but the trial court made no such award, close quote. This court remanded to the trial court to make additional findings so it could state why none of the fee was allocated against Mr. Montoya. On remand, the trial court made findings based on the credibility of Ms. Areola. The only problem with that is that Ms. Areola never testified. As far as I know, she never stepped foot into Denver District Court. She was not deposed. The trial court's findings do not state, and here I'm referring to a deposition, here I'm referring to a statement she made in open court, here I'm referring to trial. The trial court had no basis, absolutely no basis, to state that the findings that he made were based on the credibility of Ms. Areola. I brought this case up on appeal. In my opening brief, in our opening brief on behalf of Super Auto, we stated just that. The trial court's findings are not based on anything in the record. That was an invitation to Mr. Montoya to state, oh yes, they were. Look at page 12 of the record. Here's where Ms. Areola lied. Oh yes, look at a different statement. I made a statement to the district court stating that here's how she lied to me. Nothing. There is nothing in the trial court, there is nothing in the opening brief of the appellee that states where Ms. Areola might have lied. There is no intimation that she lied. He never stated to the district court judge, I have to withdraw from this case because there's a conflict. My client lied to me. In fact, for at least 6 months that he admitted, he prosecuted the case without having any contact from Ms. Areola. There was no basis in the record, there's no basis in the opening brief on appeal by the appellee that shows that there was anything based on the credibility of Ms. Areola.
Pardon me for interrupting you, counsel, if I may, please. What would you please respond to the following argument? It goes this way. There were two complaints, an original complaint and an amended complaint. These were the subject of some discussion at a hearing. There was a suggestion that the original complaint, which said that Ms. Areola made all the payments for the Thunderbird, was not necessarily accurate because perhaps she did not. And then there was an amended complaint that had different language indicating that she made Herculean efforts to make those payments. Would that be the basis for a trial court to find, as a matter of fact, that Ms. Areola had lied?
I don't think so. I think there's two problems with that. The first is there's no statement by Ms. Areola stating that, I lied, I misspoke, I stated something incorrectly. The second thing is, and if you follow through with that argument, what Mr. Montoya really said is, the payments were made on behalf of the mother. This case is really brought on behalf of the mother. My letters in 2001 were really written on behalf of the mother. The mother is not present in district court. If that is true, that the client lied to him and he was prosecuting a case for the mother made the payments, I misunderstood everything. The proper thing to have done in January of 2005 was to have withdrawn. My client lied to me. I misunderstood. I can't go forward. It was not to go forward with the litigation for 2 years, ignoring the fact, never stating to the trial court that my client lied to me.
I understand your comment, counsel, but my question really didn't go to the propriety of counsel's remaining on the case. It had to go with, could that form the basis for a finding that Lydia Areola had lied?
I guess my response to that is, no, Mr. Montoya never said she lied. I think people make mistakes. Following your line of argument, assuming it was a mistake is not a lie. The district court didn't say there's an inadequate investigation that was cleaned up by the time of the second complaint. And even though it wasn't amended, and I granted summary judgment based on the first amended complaint, that was never stated to the district court. So for the district court to have drawn that conclusion without any evidence that there was a lie, I think is improper. I think it's pure speculation on the part of the court. And furthermore, and I'll get back to my original comment, furthermore, you get back to the conduct of counsel. What was counsel doing at this point? If she lied, come to the court and say, I can't go forward because there was a lie. Never, not ever, including on the motions for attorney's fees. When instead of saying, Super Auto filed a motion for assessment of attorney's fees after the remand, instead of saying, Judge, here's what you need to know. The client lied to me. That's why we went through four motions to amend, whatever. There is nothing like that in the record. There was a motion to strike Super Auto's motion for attorney's fees, thereby in part precluding the trial court from making the findings, having the hearing, taking the evidence that this court asked it to do upon remand. Having failed to go to the trial court and state, Your Honor, here's what happened. There was a lie. I was stuck between a rock and a hard place. Don't assess the fees against me because my client lied to me. I think it's pure speculation of this court and the trial court to have found that that was a lie. I don't think there's any evidence for it, and there was not even any argument for it before the trial court.
Now, so let me ask you this. If we agreed with you, it would basically be a clear error standard, and there was a lack of support and therefore an abuse of discretion not to, on this record, award fees. You're asking us to do, aren't you, what the division in the 07 appeal declined to do, and that is to order fees outright. That division said we need further factual findings. If we agree with you the factual findings are insufficient, don't we have to send it back again for more fact findings, maybe with a hearing?
Your Honor, at this point, I believe that the trial court, both Judge Lemon and Judge Mullins, have made it perfectly clear they're not going to do that. I don't know the reason that Judge Mullins will not assess fees. I think he's made it perfectly clear.
Will not do what? Will not assess fees? If we ordered a hearing to be held, the hearing will be held.
Well,
We left the discretion, I think. I think that, you know, the prior opinion to take further evidence. And a finding was made that arguably, if we agree with you, was not supported by sufficient evidence to make that finding. But we can't make findings on a non-existent record.
Well, Your Honor, I think in this case you can, at least under the standard of NBC Wood versus Mortimer, The entire record before this case is documentary evidence. The trial court has already found that the fees were appropriate, and I believe that this court agreed. The court has already found that the case was frivolous and groundless. This court, in the first time around, said it agreed.
But we didn't say we agreed. I think we said that argument's not before us because there's no cross appeal on that. So that argument is final. That argument is final.
At this point, all of the evidence is documentary. The amount of the fee is not at issue. The conduct of counsel is not at issue. The 2001 letters are not at issue. That the trial court relied on the 2001 letters, which were 4 years before the law, 3 years before the lawsuit, and that the lawsuit was frivolous and groundless, that is all documentary. There really isn't any reason to have an additional hearing on it. I think the opportunity that this court, the first panel, allowed the trial court was to say, there's something in the record that prevented me from awarding fees, and here's what it is. When the trial court doesn't tell you what it is, and Mr. Montoya in his brief doesn't tell you what it is, I think it's pure speculation to say what it is. I don't know why the trial court didn't, but I think this court has documentary evidence and can go forward, either direct the trial court to allocate the fees against Mr. Montoya or do it yourselves, because you have the record and you are as qualified as the district court to review the documentary evidence.
So let me ask you this. What we have are two attorneys representing what happened during negotiations, and there were two versions of what may have happened, and I think that's where it came up of whether the plaintiff was making misrepresentations to her attorney or not. Can a court make a credibility finding just based on attorneys' representations about what happened?
I'm sorry, are you saying that what happened in 2001?
Well, let me take you to the motion to disqualify. And there was a representation of negotiations that were occurring, and there were different versions of what may have happened, whether plaintiff made a misrepresentation or not, and whether Mr. Montoya would be a witness to that. Can a court make a credibility determination based on attorneys' representations as to what happened?
I think at this point the court is precluded from doing anything else, since Mr. Montoya refused to allow the trial court to make that determination. I think that having refused to allow discovery into that issue, I think he has elected to go forward with the plaintiff's story. He had that as a possibility. He could have withdrawn. He could have said, no, I need to testify. That opportunity was offered to him, and he refused it. I think having refused the trial court the opportunity to take evidence on that, he can't do it now after the case is closed, and after we're only here on attorney's fees. Unless there are further questions, I know that I didn't get through my argument. We are asking that this court, based on the documentary evidence, either instruct the trial court to allocate 100% of the fees against Mr. Montoya, and I would point out to the court, for at least 6 months, there was no client. The client is not responsible for any of the conduct in the motions. The client didn't write the kinds of scurrilous things that are in the briefs that I pointed out to you.
Let me ask this, Counsel. You just said 100% of the fees. I understood your brief to say joint and several. You'd still want an award against Ms. Arriola or not? The award has been upheld against Ms. Arriola.
The award has been upheld.
So it'll be joint and several liability. We'd say that they equally bear responsibility for the fees.
Well, she's the client. She hired the lawyer. I don't know that the court should have allocated it that way. The court did it. The reality here is that Ms. Arriola is not available. That's the real problem. And I think Mr. Montoya knew that when he didn't appeal the judgment. Ms. Arriola is essentially, as far as we know, judgment proof, and she's not even present. That's on Mr. Montoya's statement. And I think neither one of us really focused on that, because we didn't think, and now I do not think, that the judgment will ever be recoverable. I'm asking that this court make that judgment recoverable from the person that was responsible for the incurring of the fees. Ms. Arriola started the case. She did hire Mr. Montoya as a client. Maybe she's liable for the whole fee because she started the case, and maybe she should have known better. That's what the district court found. The person that caused the case, caused Superano to incur the attorney's fees to get to where we are now, yes, Ms. Ariola started the case. Yes, she's the plaintiff. That person is Mr. Montoya. We would ask this court to assess the fees against him either directly or by directing the district court to allocate the fees. I see that I only have a minute and a half. I'd like to reserve that for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. I'm Bruce Heilbrun, attorney 10937. My name is spelled H-E-I-L-B-R-U-N-N. It's interesting that...
Pardon me for a second, Mr. Heilbrun. Please stop the clock. Have you entered... No, no, no. The bailiff will do that. Have you entered your appearance in this case?
I was asked to handle this particular hearing, and for this, I have not answered my appearance.
Okay, so we have no document from you entering that you entered your appearance.
But I can submit one.
That, please?
I will do that.
All right, thank you. Please start the clock again. Thank you, sir.
It's very interesting that opposing counsel says that Mr. Montoya didn't have contact for 6 months. With all due respect to opposing counsel, they don't know, and they admit they don't know. In one of their briefs, they said the plaintiff admits it cannot prove how long Montoya had no contact with the client. The fact is, the client assured Mr. Montoya that she would appear, the case would not have been brought if the client hadn't assured Mr. Montoya that he intended to prosecute it. And apparently, because she didn't appear, she may not have had any intention to appear. She lied about her intention to prosecute the case.
Pardon me, Mr. Heilbrun. I understand that is one inference one may make from her absence. But at the time of the hearing, there was no discussion of her lying. At the time of the hearing, there was a statement that her boyfriend had been released from prison recently and that they'd eloped and she'd left her child with her mother. There was no statement, she lied to me.
No, that's true. There was no statement that she lied. It's an inference that can be made. The court had earlier mentioned that about the statement that I made all the payments. That statement came about because Miss Ariola was translating for Ms. Hernandez and said I made all the payments to the extent that it's interpreted as that Ariola herself made the payments. That statement was not true, and we tried to correct that statement throughout the record.
Counsel, let me ask you this if I can. This case has already been determined to have been frivolous. And the reason it was frivolous, as I understand it, is because in November of 2001, your client, representing his client, filed, I think, four letters that had the legal effect of ratifying the transaction. And then he prosecuted the case in, I think, 2005 and lost a summary judgment, I believe it was, based largely on the letters he had written. And the court, in a final order, said that it was frivolous to have done so. I'm at a loss. I'm not sure there's any support for whether she lied to him or any of this lie stuff, but regardless, I'm at a loss to understand how the basis of the frivolity determination has anything to do with what was lied or said from client to attorney, really with what was said by the attorney in 2001, isn't it?
No, I don't agree, Your Honor. Those letters, they can only be ratification. Well, let me start with the court's order. I think the court, the district court's order finding that the case was frivolous, I think the court should look upon that order with some caution. That order was written entirely by opposing counsel.
Let me interrupt you. That order is final. Your client did not timely appeal that order. So summary judgment has been entered, and the case has been determined to have been frivolous. Those issues are law of the case. They're over.
But they're also hindsight, Your Honor.
They're not hindsight. They happened. They happened, and they weren't appealed. Their final judgments.
At the time those letters were written, we did not have copies of the contract to purchase the automobile, the agreement, or anything else. All we knew is that they were trying to collect the judgment against Lydia Areola and Hernandez. That's absolutely all we knew. When he came in, when Mr. Montoya came in and wrote those letters, he wrote those letters requesting a copy of all the relevant paperwork. That what was sent was a prior transaction involving a Mustang. We didn't get the paperwork until much later, and the paperwork had forged Lydia Areola's name on it. So we had none of the facts. Looking at what counsel knew in 2001, we had none of the facts.
Well, maybe you shouldn't have written the letters. Maybe you shouldn't have written the letters, but the letters were relied on successfully by the defense to obtain summary judgment in an order that's now final, and an order that in that same order said it was frivolous to continue prosecuting the case in light of those letters. Now, maybe you could have appealed that back in 05 in the 07 appeal, but it wasn't done.
Well, the problem with that order was entered because the client didn't appear. I think the question is, whenever the client doesn't appear, are we going to hold the attorney responsible? This was a pro bono case. We were dealing with very poor people who sometimes are somewhat dysfunctional. That order was entered because we had no evidence to present. Attorney fees, from my point of view, those attorney fees were entered because there was no evidence supporting the plaintiff's claim at the time of the hearing on ratification.
Can I ask you a question based on something you just said, and it's in the briefs as well, pro bono case. Is there any evidence in the record that it was pro bono apart from the client's statement or the attorney's statement? Are we sure this was not a contingency case?
This was not a contingency case. It was absolutely not a contingency case. There was never going to be any fee. There wasn't even going to be a lawsuit. All we wanted to do was to get the facts on what was owed on the car. There was no lawsuit until we learned that Lydia Areola's name had been signed on the documents. And that's never really been denied, that Lydia Areola's name was signed on the document by Hernandez. That's why the lawsuit was brought. None of this was known when the letters were written. I have concern about with respect to pro bono work. Sometimes an attorney takes a pro bono case and the client is maybe not the most reliable or steady person in the world. If we're going to hold the attorney liable in a situation like this because the client didn't appear, that it's going to have a chilling effect on pro bono representation. This was a valid lawsuit when it was brought. Later, because the client didn't appear, the case was found to be frivolous. But I think the case law is clear that the court should avoid using the wisdom of hindsight in inquiring what was reasonable to believe at the time of the pleading was final. And I'm citing Beat Rapport Small Associates at 98 Fed 3rd 926. And I also want to point out that if the Court of Appeals is dissatisfied with the findings of the trial court on the issue of attorney fees, the proper role for the court is to remand it down and to have a hearing. And on hearing on allocation, it seemed to me to be improper to allocate all the fees against Mr. Montoya without there being a hearing on allocation, which there's never been. And the court delineated the role of the Court of Appeals, the Supreme Court delineated the role of the Court of Appeals in cases like this, in Board of County Commissioners versus Auslander at 745 P. Second 999 at 1001.
Mr. Halpern, the court made a finding that the claims were based on plaintiff's lies. Did the court identify what those lies were, or did the record identify what those lies were?
No, he didn't say what the lies were.
And is there anything in the record to show what statements constituted what the court was interpreting to be lies?
I don't think that. I think that I can infer what the court meant, but it's not clear because the court didn't put it in its order what the lie was. But if it's going to be sent If that's the opinion of the Court of Appeals, our position is it should be sent back to the trial court.
Understanding that, Mr. Heilbrun, are you conceding that there is nothing in the record to support the trial court's finding that Ms. Arreola lied?
I believe the court could make that inference by the failure of the client to appear for trial, but there is nothing written in the record on that point.
And you have nothing else to point to that could support the inference that she lied?
Well, the statement that she made all the payments wasn't true.
Well, okay. Going to the original complaint, the original complaint said she made them. And then the amended complaint said that she believed she had to protect her credit as well as her mother's and made Herculean efforts to make all of the payments upon the subject vehicle.
Statements were untrue. At some point, the client and Ms. Hernandez came to the office, and Mr. Montoya inquired about that, and it became clear that the untrue statement was because Arreola was interpreting for Hernandez and said, "I made all the payments," and that was misunderstood. But the statement in both pleadings was not true.
Okay, but I don't mean to beat a dead horse here, but isn't there a big difference between I misunderstood, meaning the lawyer, I misunderstood the translation from the Spanish, and I thought the translator was speaking about herself rather than the person for whom she was translating. Isn't there a big difference between that and saying that the translator lied?
I believe that there is a difference, and I have conceded that the district court did not identify what the lie was. Are there any other questions? I have no further questions.
Counsel, you have about a minute and a half.
Thank you, Your Honor. We didn't make up that the plaintiff's lawyer had no contact with the plaintiff. At the trial, when she didn't appear, he stated that. The trail of the plaintiff has gone cold, and he stated it rather dramatically. From that point forward, he never stated that she was back in contact or anything like that. So from June until December, he's prosecuted that case without any input from the plaintiff. We didn't make that up. He admitted as much. I think the court has the piece on the pro bono. What we see here, in my opinion, you know, that the trial court says, oh, she lied. What we have is Mr. Montoya then saying, oh, yeah, here's what the lies were. Now here, when stuck on his own petard, when we come forth and say, well, wait a second, what are the lies? And you say the lie was that she didn't come to court. Well, that's you can't infer from that she lied. Oh, she's dysfunctional. That was the lie. Well, that's not the basis to infer she was lying. What we have is continuing conduct on the part of the lawyer making up the case as he goes along. And I ask this court, based on the documentary record, which shows what that conduct was, to allocate the attorney's fees against the offending party. Unless there are further questions, I would rest.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. The arguments in this case are now concluded. There will be an opinion that we issue in due course.